You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 147. Today's episode is a question and answer show where we answer questions from listeners like you. The last show was a discussion about the West Bank of New Orleans with friend of the podcast, Richard Campanella. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. Before we jump in, let me talk about the people that make this show possible. Support comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection, the city's premier history museum located at 520 Royal Street in the heart of the French Quarter. There you'll get to explore three centuries of great New Orleans stories in some of our most historic spaces, and admission is free. Don't miss the immersive film about the history of the French Quarter at night or any of the museum's changing exhibitions in the new Tricentennial Wing. Go to hnoc.org/visit to plan your trip. The most frequent questions I get about New Orleans are about moving to the city. If you're ready to make the move, you need a good realtor, and that's where Liz Wood comes in. Let Liz and her team over at Liz Wood Realty help you find the right place. They can help whether you plan to rent or purchase. Look, moving to New Orleans is a dream come true for a lot of people, but it's also confusing. You know, do you want to live uptown or downtown, mid-city or by the lake, back of town, in the Bywater, the Marigny, the Treme? It's just a lot to process and a lot to figure out. Every neighborhood is so different. And Liz really makes that process fun and easy. Reach out to her at lizwoodrealty.com and make your dream of living in New Orleans a reality. And while you're working with Liz, you need to secure financing, right? So reach out to Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast Mortgage and let him help you get everything in place. That's what we did on our recent refinance, and even we went and got pre-approved and pre-qualified because we were thinking about moving. We ended up not doing it, but we went through that process with Tommy, and both processes were as smooth as could be. There'll be a link in the show notes for everything we talk about, but to reach out to Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast Bank. Today's episode is sponsored by our Patreon supporters. If you love the podcast, the Facebook group, and the work I'm doing, please consider becoming a monthly supporter. You can find out more at patreon.com/beyondbourbonst. We have perks at all levels, and if you join at the $10 level or higher, we'll mention you on an episode like Are You Uptown, Terry Baker, Jen McKay, Cliff Hochberg, I hope I'm saying that right, Cliff, Carrie Tabb, and Shannon Watson. Now, on to the questions. As I mentioned, today's a Q&A show, so we get questions from two places. We get them from our Patreon supporters, and those go to the top of the list. There's just one small perk for being a patron supporting us. And then we go to our Facebook group, the Beyond Bourbon Street Crew, K-R-E-W-E, and we put a post there and ask for questions. So that's where they come. I generally don't look at them too much ahead of time, just except while I'm assembling them and putting them into a sheet. So kind of what you get from me in most cases is just stream of conscious thinking and kind of where my head is now relative to the questions you ask. So with that, let's jump in. Question number one comes from Jeff Cooper, a patron. This might be a sensitive topic, but thought I'd ask. It's well known, even joked about, that basic services in New Orleans sometimes seem almost on the level of a third world country at times. Why is that? Is it a tax base issue? Is it a services management issue? Poor allocation of dollars? All of the above? Well, it is a good question. And as a New Orleanian, it's one of the great sources of frustration. I think the short answer is that it's a combination of all of the things you talk about. It is, on the one hand, there's an eroding tax base, yet at the same time, prices keep going up. So people that come in pay top dollar and obviously are contributing their taxes. I think that that things aren't always well run or often not well run. I think that there are major infrastructure challenges here that even if we were a better run city, in my opinion, we would still have challenges because so much of the infrastructure is so far beyond the grasp of a city. You know, when you think about coastal erosion and the wetlands and all of the projects with the levees and the drainage pumps, so much of that depends on federal dollars. Like a lot of places across the country, you know, the infrastructure is crumbling. I think here it's made worse. by not the best management, by deferred maintenance. You know, we depend on I should do a whole episode about the pumps, actually. But we depend on pumps to pump the water out of the city. And one part of that is the federal part with all of the levees and you know, the Corps of Engineers. But another part are that we are depending on pumps that are 100 or more years old. And not only has the technology not changed, but I don't think that they've kept up as much as they should or could with just maintenance. And of course, there's a cost there. I also think there's this weird thing in New Orleans that we just come to sort of accept it because there is so much good. So before COVID, you know, I think we tolerated a lot of things because we could look forward to Mardi Gras. We could look forward to a full schedule of festivals. We could look forward to going out to eat and hearing live music with friends and family. And I think with COVID, you've seen the goodness that sort of allows us to tolerate the stuff that's not so great. You've seen that slip away, and that's been really hard. And then you layer on top of it, we had a pretty rough hurricane season and certainly Hurricane Ida. And I feel personally like it's gotten harder to accept the sort of dysfunction and dealing with things like potholes, or now we'd only get trash pickup once a week and they've discontinued the recycling for now. And boy, this is sort of quite a downer for a first question, but I think that it is an age-old thing. There are certain truisms or isms about New Orleans. Government often tends to be not the best. The infrastructure is not the best. You know, those kind of things. But yet, on the other side, people love to come here. People love to live here because when it is good, it's really great. So I think it's a little bit of willful neglect, if you will. I also do think there is definitely a tax base issue. There's a huge problem with not holding the organizations accountable, whether it is waste pickup or the Sewage and Water Board or even Entergy. And I think that those things just all come to roost. You know, when you get flooded with water regularly, it causes damage to infrastructure. And so it just becomes this vicious cycle, if you will. So thanks for starting us off on such a positive question, Jeff, but I do appreciate the support and I do appreciate the question. Number two comes from Eric Boyle. As a husband of a high school teacher out here in Denver, I know it has been so good for students to be back in person. First and most importantly, I want to know how your daughters are doing through all of this. And second, curious how the New Orleans marching bands have been impacted. I know one guest touched upon this a few episodes back. Big picture, as an outsider, fascinated on the high school marching band scene, would love to learn more in an episode at some point. Thanks, Eric. Let's see. Our kids have been back in school really for over a year. You know, in the first year of COVID, they did the whole remote learning like everyone did. But then they were back this past year with masks. And I think we only had... So longtime listeners know we have twins. In fact, they're going to be 10 years old on Halloween, twin girls. And for this last year, one of them was home once or twice for COVID protocols, you know, didn't get sick, but somebody in the class got exposed. But the other one didn't at all. And so far through the beginning of this year, we were impacted by Ida. So we lost 2 weeks of school, but so far so good. And I would say, you know, kids are resilient. They've adapted to wearing masks and they wear masks that kind of fit their individual styles. And it really hasn't been, you know, that part hasn't been that big a deal for us. In terms of marching bands, yes, I did a recent episode with Bryce Miller and he talked about St. Augustine, the St. Aug Marching Knights, Marching 100, the St. Aug Purple Knights. I also grew up in marching band at Brother Martin High School. I think that certainly the biggest way that marching bands, high school marching bands have been affected was not having Mardi Gras last year. So the local bands, local high schools march in parades and they get paid for that. Not the students, but the school gets paid. Often several thousand dollars per parade, which is why you will see some of the more popular bands seemingly perform every night. And in the case of St. Aug, sometimes two parades on Mardi Gras Day, back to back. And each parade is typically 5 to 7 miles long. So it's a huge fundraiser for the school and for the marching band, you know, to get uniforms and supplies and instruments and all that stuff. So missing out on that last year, as well as performing at festivals, a lot of opportunities for lost income for the programs. So that's a big deal. You know, having been a student a long time ago, it's also a lot of fun, right? There's a lot of pride and a lot of uniqueness in marching in a parade and seeing it from that perspective, getting to play music and hearing the feedback, you know, and then also in many cases, not this year, but before, I guess, in the first year of COVID, it's crazy that we have to sort of think of it that way. Lots of opportunities were canceled beyond that, right? I mentioned festivals, but also sometimes football games were canceled. And so that's had a big impact. And the bigger picture is that New Orleans marching band culture really helps feed the elementary and the high school music systems, really help feed tomorrow's performers. So many of the musicians that you know and love from New Orleans grew up in elementary, middle school, high school band programs here in the city, often taught by like this lineage of teachers and music professionals. And so when you lose that, you know, when you lose a year or two, you are just taking cohorts out of that culture and out of that history. So I think that it's had a big impact, and it's an impact that will be hard to measure. But, you know, when you're a kid, if you lose a year or two of those performing opportunities, that's huge. So, you know, hopefully we look like we're on track to have Mardi Gras. That's a big deal for kids to get to do it. And again, it's also a money-making venture for the schools. So hopefully we're headed on a good path there. Next up, another patron, Joe Sweeney. I was a house guest uptown this past weekend, and I decided to walk to the New Orleans Museum of Art and the Sculpture Garden, which is not to be missed, he adds, then over to Esplanade to near the river through the French Quarter and eventually back uptown, mostly along Magazine. That's a long route. Most friends believe me to be crazy. Why do people not walk New Orleans? I think walking is the single best way to understand people, place, culture, architecture, geography. Well, thanks for the question, Joe, and thanks for a recent wonderful dinner at St. John, the new restaurant in the French Quarter. I think people do walk. I think they tend to walk in a neighborhood, so certainly within the French Quarter, within the Garden District. I don't think that New Orleans is a city known for walking like you did, walking quite a ways. In some cases, there's just like not quite a natural walking path, so to get from uptown to Carrollton or uptown to downtown or into the French Quarter, you know, sort of within a segment along the river is pretty easy. As you try to go from the river to the general direction of Lake Pontchartrain and to, that would include City Park, there's fewer options. The Lafitte Greenway is beautiful, and that's a relatively new, the last couple of years, path that gets you from the back of the French Quarter into the heart of Mid-City and over to City Park. But coming down Carrollton Avenue, for instance, you just go through a section that's, one, really heavy with cars, and so not always the safest from that perspective. And you go through a mile or so that's just not that scenic. Interestingly enough, if you took that walk, you would pass by where the Pelicans used to play back at the turn of the century. So I do think of it as a walking place. I think certainly lots of people walk in the Marigny and the Bywater, but it's going from sort of one quadrant of the city to another that maybe there is not as much. In general, though, I agree with you. It is the best way to kind of really get to know the city. And it's a way to observe the details, right? So the architecture, the street art, which I think there's a question about later on, all of that kind of comes to life when you're walking. Geography, you know, we've had Richard Campanella on several times. And one of the things that you note when you walk uptown is the little pocket parks. And those pocket parks, every time you come across one, that is at the intersection where two plantations touched. And when they were subdivided, usually they weren't subdivided at the same time. So when the second surveyor had to plat out the land for sale, invariably, because those plantations were shaped based on the river, and then they kind of narrowed coming back towards St. Charles Avenue and beyond. So what you'd end up with is they would try to plat them out, and they would end up with these little odd shapes. And those odd shapes became what are today pocket parks. And that's like something about the geography that you really, one, you wouldn't know unless you know, now that I've told you, if you've read Richard Campanella's books. But two, that's a really hard thing to observe if you're not on foot. So thanks for the question. I think it's a good one. I do think New Orleans is a city that's wonderful to explore on foot. and kind of fits our just slower pace of life too. Let's see, I have two more from Patreon supporters. Travis Shepard, what are your favorite places for live music in the city? Well, first of all, we've just started going back to seeing or hearing music live, which is something I definitely missed. I really like a place called Chickiwawa on Canal Street. The owner died during COVID. I don't think from COVID, but died during COVID. And so now it's kind of being run at the moment by sort of a collective of musicians. So that is a great place for live music. It's small, but it's intimate. It's got a good sound system. It's a good place to hear music. Tipitina's, of course. The Broad Street Theater has an outside venue that popped up during COVID called The Broadside that is really popular and fun. I like the House of Blues. I like the Fillmore, which had opened just maybe a year before COVID, maybe even less. That's connected with Harrah's Casino, and that's a really nice medium-large venue, so it can hold, I think, maybe 1,500 or 2,000, maybe 2,000 people. That's a nice spot. Again, I mentioned Tipitina's is just classic. I haven't been to Maple Leaf Bar in a long time, pre-COVID, but that's certainly a fun spot. And then Kermit's Mother-in-Law Lounge is cozy and fun and full of atmosphere. So those are a few. Offbeat Magazine has the best list, in my opinion, of places to go or list of events and performances. And so that's a pretty good guide to just take a look at Offbeat Magazine. And I will try to remember to put a link in the show notes to their music listing. And so that gives you a good sense of where the music is. And Lisa Cobb says, what are your thoughts on retiring in New Orleans? From only being a visitor, I see the walkability of some areas, the transit system, the chance of part or full-time employment, volunteer opportunities, and the welcoming spirit of residents. Weather is not an issue for me as I live in Houston. So yeah, you're used to the heat. I lived in Houston, and what I would tell you, the one difference is the heat to me felt like it always broke at night in Houston. And in the middle of summer in August here, it feels like it just doesn't break. So the heat and humidity just don't ease up. So that might be one difference, but generally they're pretty similar in terms of their weather. I think that retirees do like it here. I think that there are opportunities to rent or to live in a high rise in a condo down in the Warehouse District, which is very different and really wasn't something that was widely available until a couple years ago. And while you certainly pay for proximity to the French Quarter and being in the Warehouse District, I think that can be a really neat experience for retirees. We know several people, including some that have purchased places through Liz Wood, who I mentioned earlier. That can be a fun way to retire and live in a building and be able to just get out and explore. I think that New Orleans is a slower pace of life, and so that can fit with retirement. You know, I also think then when you're retiring, you don't have to worry about schools and some of the challenges with you're still paying taxes, obviously, but we pay a lot of taxes and we still choose to put our kids in private school because we think that gives them the best chance at a good education. That's a tough spot and one that I wish that we weren't in. And as a retiree, you don't have to worry about that. So I think that there are also plenty of opportunities to volunteer, and certainly like everywhere across the country right now, there's plenty of jobs to be had. One thing with a full schedule of events throughout the year is you can volunteer. So like if you want to go to Jazz Fest, you can be a volunteer and you volunteer for 4 hours and you get a ticket for the rest of the day at the festival. I think it's 4 hours. There's lots of festivals where you could volunteer and then therefore get in for free and enjoy the festivities. So I do think we have a lot to offer. It's maybe not a traditional place that people think of for retirement, but I can tell you through the podcast, I've met many people who have chosen to have either a second home here with an eye towards retirement or have actually moved here in retirement. Some frequent posters on the Facebook group. And just a few weeks ago, I was recording an episode, well, maybe a couple months ago, I was recording in the French Quarter and I was walking back to my car and someone yelled out to me. And then I went over and said, hi. And it was someone who had bought a house in the French Quarter and was a fan of the podcast. So people definitely do it. I think that look, I love New Orleans. I think it's a great spot. And I think a retiree, there's some of the things that drive me crazy as a parent of young kids you wouldn't have to deal with. So it makes it, you know, maybe even more attractive. Let's see. Now we're going to move on to questions that I got from the Facebook group. I say that, and some of these people I know are also patrons, but if they posted in the Facebook group, then that's where I got them from. Cliff Hochberg says, I'm a drummer and I'll be attending New Orleans Traditional Jazz Camp in June. Camp starts at 9 a.m. and as a morning person, I figure it seems like a great time to get out and experience a different aspect of town. We're staying at the Bourbon Orleans right in the quarter. Any early morning suggestions before I attend camp and my wife goes sightseeing? Yes, definitely. The morning is my favorite time of day in the French Quarter. For one, it's the cleanest and the least smelly, but it's also a chance to see the French Quarter as a neighborhood. So if you get up early and you go for a walk or a run, you see people cleaning the streets. You see the bars and restaurants being restocked. So you see the beer trucks and the food trucks, right? But you also see, particularly as you head towards Esplanade Avenue and that side, the downtown side of the French Quarter, you see what the French Quarter is, and that is a neighborhood. So you see people out walking their dogs, and you see people at, say, Café Envie having a cup of coffee and reading the newspaper. You see Cabrini Park back in that direction again with the dogs and things. And I think it's fun to watch the city wake up. You hear the riverboat traffic. You hear the horns on the river. Sometimes you'll hear the calliope from the steamboat Natchez. I think that my favorite thing to do is just to wander the full breadth and depth of the French Quarter, you know, with a cafe au lait and just absorb it. It's quiet. It's daylight. So, you know, I think it's a little bit safer to go sort of the full width of the quarter. You don't have too many worries there. And it's a great time to just observe, sort of like one of the earlier questions from Joe, to observe the architecture and take it in. You know, sometimes at night, one, some of the details are lost at night. And then two, you don't want to get too far off the beaten path. But in the morning, you can just feel the energy of the city and of the neighborhood coming to life. And it's also when, to me, the French Quarter feels the most European, again, because it's just kind of that waking up and walking out into the neighborhood and seeing, you know, I can remember years ago being in Versailles, France, and wandering the neighborhood. Versailles is really like a medium-sized village, and just wandering and seeing people doing everyday things and how much that made me feel a tiny part of that community at that moment, to be able to go buy a baguette and some coffee and just kind of observe the everyday goings on. And I think that's the beauty of the French Quarter in the morning. So that's what I would absolutely do. You know, you can go get your coffee and beignets one morning, but you can go up to the river and again, observe the traffic early in the morning, but just wander up and down, particularly as you get on the downtown side of Jackson Square. So once you cross St. Anne, St. Louis streets, it starts to get just more residential. And as you get further back towards the Treme, so towards Rampart Street, you get away from some of the commercial aspects of the French Quarter and just take your time and go for a walk together and enjoy that. So there you go. I hope that helps. Stephanie Lorme. Hey, Mark, I know you've been hesitant to cover anything about Katrina. How about recovery from it? More specifically, and kind of spiritually, I guess, I'm thinking about the Saints in 2006 and Steve Gleason and what that time meant to the soul of the city. I lived in New Orleans way before Katrina and was an expat during that time, but was what brought my heart back. Maybe there's a Steve Gleason story and or a Gail Benson story with what she's done recently to help the city. Just a thought. Thanks. So that's more of a comment, right? I appreciate it. I have sort of stayed away from the story of Katrina. You know, it's been all these years and I still just have a hard time talking about it. I think there's been a lot written about it. I think we've done a little bit here and there, and I've certainly done, I think I did one post-Ida even, or pre-Ida, about what it's like to pack up and sort of dealing with it. You know, this, yes, could be a whole episode. I think that when, what she's referring to with Steve Gleason was the first Saints game back in the Dome about a year after the storm. The Saints played the Falcons. It was a huge deal. Both Green Day and U2 played at the opening to the game. In the first series, so the Saints and the Falcons have a huge rivalry. In the first series, Atlanta goes back to punt, and Steve Gleason breaks through the line, blocks a punt. And it kind of set this tone, and it was this real cathartic moment for the city. Steve Gleason is long since retired, but has become kind of the face of New Orleans in a lot of ways. He has been fighting and battling ALS now for, I think, 8 years publicly, and really he's out there a lot. And even as his health has deteriorated, his mind has not, and he's frequently out and about in public. He's very active on social media. And I think that whole moment really sort of galvanized the city and made people feel like, yes, we're on our way back. Of course, never knowing at the time it was going to take years and years and years. But nonetheless, it was a real moment of kind of coming together in the city. And many people point to that night and that game and that moment as kind of a rallying point, if you will, right? I think that the recovery has been a complicated one in that it's all these years later and we still feel the effects of it in so many ways. We both positive and negative. We had many people come to help. Lots of church groups came to help, and lots of those people are now adults because it's been so many years and have come back to the city, either as visitors or some have moved to the city. I think that in some cases, the rose-colored glasses come off and you see the challenges in a different way. You know, when there's a storm, obviously everyone rallies around trying to recover from the storm. But back to one of the earlier questions about retirement, when you come back to live, then depending on the time of life, you know, season of life that you're in, the challenges may or may not be more frustrating. You know, potholes, for instance, or school districts, or government corruption, or infrastructure in general, right? So I think we had a moment to change things, and some things did change. Some things turned out to be good changes, bringing new people coming into the city for whatever reason, right? I think really kind of refreshed the city in a positive way. Now, other people will say, well, there's gentrification because of that. And I think that's true, and that's a fair criticism. But I also believe that it was a chance for some new New Orleanians, and that's been a good thing. I think that we missed a moment. Our infrastructure got better in terms of the levees and the federal work that was done, but the pump system is no different than it was. You know, our challenges in some ways are very much more than they were. There have been, I don't know how to quantify it, but the amount of wetlands lost since then has been significant. And so you see, combined with global warming, you see the storms coming in harder and faster and bigger. So it's a mixed thing. You mentioned Gail Benson, who's the owner of the New Orleans Saints and the New Orleans Pelicans. She has done a lot. She's gifted a lot of money. She's also somewhat of a lightning rod, I would say. A lot of people love Gail Benson. A lot of people don't love her association with the Catholic Church. You know, she's a devout Catholic, so I certainly understand that. At the same time, the diocese, like many in the country, declared bankruptcy, at least in part, to escape some lawsuits over child sexual harassment and sexual abuse. So, like so many things in the city and probably everywhere, there are layers, and the recovery from Katrina is complicated. And I think there are stories of hope and renewal and really positive things that came out of it. And I think there are missed opportunities that things could have been better and they aren't. So it's very much a mixed bag. I do think there's a story there, and I agree with you. And so maybe there's a way for me to approach it at some point from a slightly different angle than the story of what actually happened and the storm itself, if you will. So thanks for that. Tracy Gentry asks, when I think of New Orleans, I think of the local music, the many choices of amazing food, the fun-loving people, and the art and architecture. A couple of my favorite episodes of the podcast are the ones with Paul Sanchez. I've mentioned before asking for John Boutte, I'd love to hear more from local musicians and their stories. Anything on the horizon? Well, again, I did just do one with Bryce Miller, who's a musician. He plays often with Wynton Marsalis. I'm always on the lookout. I would say that it's not always easy to get musicians to commit. And they're also busy. They travel a lot. They're performing a lot. And it's also a matter of the right musician. So I need to have someone who's going to have an interest in having a conversation for 45 minutes or an hour. Sometimes it's just not as easy as you would think. But again, we just did one with Bryce Miller. I'm often interested in different perspectives, so I'll continue to look for that. I also realize as I read your question, all of these, I don't know why I did this this way, but all of these so far have been from Patreons or patrons, and I haven't been counting how many we have, so I don't know what number we're on. Let's see, Tracy has another one. As you know, I took my girls down during this past summer in August. It was hot and humid, but they love so many things and can't wait to get back. As a father, of course, I was extra careful and watching their every move with the interactions of others. We explored all over, and not one time did I ever feel they were unsafe. That's awesome. I know you have twin daughters. Yes, I do. I wonder, have you ever felt unsafe with your daughters in your travels throughout New Orleans? That's a good question, and the answer is no. Again, longtime listeners know we chose to come back to New Orleans when our girls were 10 weeks old to raise them as New Orleanians and to get some help from my parents. We live in the heart of the city, so that was a deliberate choice to live in New Orleans and not live in a suburb. I'm recording this the day before Halloween, and on Halloween, my girls will turn 10 years old, so they have lived here essentially their entire lives in the same house and in the city. And we get out, we do a lot of things. You know, pre-COVID, of course, we took them to music festivals, and we certainly go to lots of parades and lots of just community activities. We take them to the French Quarter. You know, we're smart about, we don't take them places we wouldn't go. We don't take them off the beaten path at night, right? We don't take them, really, we take them lots of places. I guess that's kind of the only thing, we take the precautions we would take for ourselves. And also, you know, the precautions, we're not keeping kids out late at night just because they're kids and that wouldn't be fun for anybody. But I really don't feel unsafe. I think, like any big city, we lived in Northern Virginia and so worked in Washington, D.C. before we moved here. And so we had just a couple months with the kids when they were newborns. But I kind of feel like it's the same rules as it would be if we were living there. You know, we're mindful of traffic. We're mindful of big places where a kid could run off and get lost in a crowd. But no, I don't feel unsafe with the children. If we did, we wouldn't live here. That could imply not in the New Orleans area at all. It could imply not being in the city, and we chose to do both. Again, we live right in the heart of the city, just a couple miles from downtown, from the French Quarter. And no, we don't really have any concern other than just typical parental care, right? I'm watching out. I think the thing I most worry about is a kid running out in the middle of the street and getting hit by a car. You know, when we go to festivals, we maybe not, we wouldn't do it now, but when they were a little younger, we would write our phone number on their wrist or on their arm or make sure there was some tag attached to their clothing just in case something happened. But we really haven't had a problem. And, you know, they've grown up with it. So they know when we go to a festival or an event, you know, we kind of create a base camp, if you will, like I'm sure lots of families do, and try to make sure they're oriented with where they are relative to us. And, you know, we're probably a little overprotective as parents, I would say. That's just our nature. But no, we take them out. They have been lamenting not only missing Mardi Gras, but Jazz Fest. And then when Jazz Fest got moved to an October date, they were really excited about that because it was in their birthday month. So they are probably looking forward to Jazz Fest just as much as mom and dad are. And, you know, it would be hard to live in New Orleans and not do New Orleans things. Kind of for some of the reasons we talked about before. Living here is not always easy. So if you lived here and chose not to partake in the things that make it great, then it quickly becomes, what's the point? And, you know, that same thing applies to raising our children. There's so much history and so much culture that if we were afraid to be out in it, it would kind of defeat the point of living here as opposed to living in a suburb or living somewhere else. Good question, though. We really do. We feel comfortable having the kids out and about in New Orleans. Okay, so now we get to the questions from Facebook. David Smith says, is there a credible source mapping out the wall murals in the city? So I mentioned earlier, I don't really read the questions ahead of time too much, and I don't try to research them. But I saw this one when it popped up on Facebook, and so I did look into it. And what I found, I'm going to put a link in the show notes, which will be over at beyondbourbonst.com/147. There was an article about 2 years ago on NOLA.com by Will Coviello. And it basically had a listing. It said at the time, New Orleans has more than 140 public murals you can view while physical distancing. God, it's hard to believe this article's almost 2 years old and it was talking about social distancing. And it gives a lot of links. It shows some photos of different things, murals and street art, and it also gives lots of links. So rather than read that off, I'm going to refer you to this article. There is no master list, but this article is pretty good, and it highlights a lot of the places I would recommend you go take a look. In general, in the Central Business District, Warehouse District, the Marigny and the Bywater are where you're going to see the most street art, the most murals, that kind of thing. The Homer Plessy mural is pretty amazing, right sort of at the intersection of the Marigny and the Bywater. But again, Will does a great job in this article, so I'm going to link to it, and that would be a great jumping off spot. I would also say you are a member of the Facebook group, so that's a good place to put a question, maybe asking people, you know, what's their favorite wall art or street art or mural, and a link or a photograph would be a really fun thread to create there in the group, David, so thank you. Jackie Rice Abston, who is the owner of one of our sponsors, the NOLA T-shirt Club, says, have you done a podcast about holiday traditions in New Orleans that are different than other cities and the best thing to do in the city during the season? We've actually done two, Jackie. One was episode 75 that was titled Fall Festivals, but we talked about things like the bonfires, celebration in the Oaks, which is they light up the Jackie knows this, obviously, but they light up the Live Oaks in City Park with Christmas lights, and there's a festival of sorts. We talked about Réveillon dinners, so we covered a lot in that one. And then just a few episodes later, in episode 79, I had Ian McNulty on the show, and that one we really focused on the Réveillon dinners. So these are dinners that are held, they're fixed-price menu dinners held between Thanksgiving and New Year's. It was a creation of the I forget what it's called, but the French Quarter Association, Restaurant Association, to try to drum up business in what used to be a really down time. And so they would have these fixed price menus kind of based on traditional French Réveillon menus. Réveillon was this idea that you would have a large meal after midnight mass, but before Christmas morning. So everyone would come back, have this big meal, sleep in, and then of course, Papa Noel would show up with the gifts for the kids. So that tradition has been transferred into the restaurants, really going back to the 1990s, I think. It's hugely popular. There's dozens of restaurants that participate. The menus run from usually the lowest price one is at the Gumbo Shop, and it's about $30, $35. Commander's Palace, sometimes does a 10, 12, 13 course meal that might run $135 or something like that. But a really great, unique New Orleans tradition and a fun way to do it. So yes, Jackie, we've done two, 79 and 75, and I'll put links to them. And again, since she asked the question, I'll also put a link to NOLA T-shirt Club. They are a sponsor of the show. They worked with me to create a Beyond Bourbon Street shirt. So maybe I'll put a link to that if you want to support us. Both Jackie and John, as well as myself, you can pick up a Beyond Bourbon Street shirt. But they have plenty of others. And in fact, I pretty much every day wear a NOLA T-shirt Club T-shirt. Let's see, two more questions, I think. Arna Hemingway, have you ever gone and heard Doreen Ketchins on Royal Street? And do you have any recommendations as to catching good street music in the city? So yes and yes, Doreen Ketchins is a street musician who is a classically trained clarinetist. She performs with her family and some friends almost every afternoon on Royal Street. She is phenomenal. In fact, getting back to one of the earlier questions, she's someone I should get on the show. I love her music. I grew up playing clarinet, not playing well, but playing clarinet. So we have that in common. The easiest way to go see the street musicians is to wander, particularly on Royal Street in the French Quarter. They don't have assigned spots, but they pretty much have assigned spots. So if you go to a certain corner every day at 2 o'clock, you can expect to see Doreen, right? If you go to a separate corner two blocks down, you can expect to see a different musician. And they're, I don't know if that works. I don't think they're permitted for a specific spot, but I think it becomes sort of like an informal community of this is where I'm going to play. So you need to find a different spot to play. But if you go down Royal Street, that's where you'll find the most. You will also find street musicians performing around Jackson Square and certainly right in front of the cathedral, the St. Louis Cathedral there. Late afternoon or mid-afternoon, 2 o'clock is usually when they start up. So, you know, 2 o'clock through the early evening is when you can hear the most and see the most. Certainly at nighttime on Frenchman Street, you'll see at least one, if not more, street musicians. And Doreen Ketchins is fabulous. So you should look her up. Again, I will see if I can find a link. I know she's on Facebook. I don't remember if she has a website or if it's just Facebook. But Doreen Ketchins is, there are plenty of really good street musicians, but she's way up there and certainly worth checking out. And let's see, the last question I have from the group is from Ryan Gibson, who says or asks, what is the current situation with the more popular for tourist cemeteries? I know Lafayette has been closed for a while, but appears that St. Louis number 1 and number 2 are closed as well. Yep, the cemeteries for the most part have been closed. Lafayette Cemetery in the Garden District has been closed for a long time, before COVID even. Lafayette Cemeteries number 1 and 2 are run by the Diocese of New Orleans, or the Save Our Cemeteries, and they've been closed for quite a while because of COVID. I don't think there's been any indication yet when they will reopen. As I'm recording this in late October, the city has just lifted the mask mandate, so I don't know that that really impacts the cemeteries because they're outside. We'll see what happens, but right now I don't know. I do know that St. Louis Cemetery number 3 on Esplanade Avenue out by Bayou St. John and City Park, it is and has been open, and that's a great one. We discussed that one with Sally Asher way back in an episode about the St. Louis Cemeteries of New Orleans. It happens to be where my maternal grandparents are buried, so I'm partial to that cemetery. And not that far away on the other side of City Park, you can certainly go to Metairie Cemetery and Lake Lawn and some of the smaller ones right there and see, you know, and see quite a bit. So maybe they're not as well known in some cases, although Metairie Cemetery is big and has a lot of really interesting architecture in it. That might be a good question as well, Ryan, to post, because we have several tour guides in our Facebook group. I'm thinking of Christine Miller with Two Chicks Walking Tours and Christina Horning with New Orleans Architecture Tours. They would probably be the ones that would know the soonest. I also know that we have a couple of volunteers in the group that help out with tours and are really connected. I'm thinking of you, Charles Goldberg. So again, Ryan, I would post that in the Facebook group and see what responses you get. All right, as is often the case on these shows, you can hear my voice fading a little bit, and I hear two very excited little girls who are in their final year of single digits just outside the door, so that's my cue to wrap it up. Thank you to everyone who submitted a question. These are always fun and challenging and thought-provoking for me about episodes and about things to encourage you to do in the city. I would ask that you please consider becoming a patron. Besides the wonderful perks that you get, including getting your questions answered first, you'll be supporting me and the work I do to bring this podcast to you. There is a lot of work. It is a labor of love, but there's a lot of work, a lot of research, a lot of going out and checking out places to try to be on top of, you know, all that's going on in the city. And so if you're interested, please just give it a moment and check it out over at patreon.com/beyondbourbonst. And with that, I'll turn it over to the girls.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.